Trigger warning, this is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay, sit and stay, 82 feet above sea level at Intergalactic K9 Studios. We loosen your leashes, unlatch those cage doors, and distract your handlers to keep a shock collar of statism from being clamped on your neck. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Phil?
It is working. I can feel it, Jeremy.
Excellent, excellent. As always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a PIPCAT, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at PIPCAT.org. So, we are back. This is the Freedom Fiends. I am Jeremy. I'm joined by Phil. Michael has decided to take the night off. So, we're going to push through without him.
Yeah, tonight is a night of ill feelings, apparently.
Yeah, well. Yeah,
so hopefully he feels
Yeah, hopefully feels he feels a little better. But yeah, I'm sure he's relaxing. But yeah, speaking of ill feelings, I had ill feelings all day today. I had to go deal with my family. All right, I do love my family to a certain extent. Well, some of them at least. But today was one of those days. It was, my family, I was brought up Roman Catholic, although I'm not a practicing, or I'm pretty much an atheist, I think, at this point in my life. But my family still celebrates all those wonderful holidays and stuff. So, of course, Easter's coming up, and today's Palm Sunday, and my mom has had this fascination with doing Easter egg hunts ever since my kids were born, even before they were capable of really walking around and looking for Easter eggs, just because she's been looking for people to do this with ever since all the kids grew up. And, you know, so she makes a big deal of it. And, of course, my kids get excited and, you know, and then they look at me and I'm pretty much the Grinch at every holiday. Because they just, or Scrooge, you know, with Bah Humbug, because they just look at me and I'm just like, oh, these stupid holidays, they're all commercial garbage crap. Like, I don't want to deal with this. I so wanted to raise my kids better than that. And my family knew this, too. Like, I said to them before they were born, I don't want you, like, going crazy on all these holidays because I don't want them getting used to that. Because I would like my kids to, like, grow up not... I don't know. I have these weird feelings about some of this stuff. Like, it dips in even to birthdays for me. I think we've actually talked about this on the show before, because everybody's like really gets weirded out when I talk about the fact that I think birthdays are ridiculous. Then they're essentially communist propaganda, because it teaches you at a young age to expect something for existing. And to me, that's just I'm very anti-birthday. And it's not that I don't love my kids, you know, and I don't want to give them things. I give them things all the time, but I buy them things randomly. I make stuff for them, like whatever. Like, I do it randomly though, because I don't want them to expect stuff on a certain day. And I think it's just something that sets kids, you know, up for failure to some extent.
Yeah, I have sort of a similar take on it. Not quite to the point of communist propaganda, but
I know it's a little. That's a little radical for most people. I get that.
Yeah, but I also I don't like having this one specific day where suddenly you're supposed to be nice to the people that you love. But, well, you know, if I see something in a store, and this is kind of how I was raised from my mother. If I see something in the store or I think of something that would make somebody in my life happy, you know, if I can, then I get it for them. I don't care if it's a birthday or if it's a Christmas. And at the same time, I generally don't celebrate Christmas or birthdays either. Well, I say generally, I don't. I don't celebrate Christmas, or at least not my birthday. I don't celebrate. Sometimes I'll celebrate somebody else's, but... But yeah, because I don't like this whole gift-giving ritualistic gift-giving where it's like you feel obligated to give to somebody. Because if you feel obligated to give, then, well, I mean, that's not really giving out of love.
Yeah, exactly. And that's my thoughts on it, too. And that actually kind of dovetails nicely back into what I was saying before about my family and the problem I actually had with them today, because today wasn't a birthday thing, although yesterday we were at a birthday party for one of their little cousins, which is another thing that, you know, I if people want to have those parties, I'll take the kids there and celebrate with them and stuff. But between that and then today with the Easter party, the other thing that, you know, talk about like obligations and stuff like that. Now, on the flip side of that, you know, giving because you want to, that's, you know, that's great and all. But the one thing that comes for that drives me insane about all these types of parties and these holiday events, especially with my family, is now it's become a thing that, you know, you give out like gift bags when people come to these parties. And then like with the Easter egg hunt we had today, you know, it was okay, show up for Easter egg hunt, but then you get like little Easter baskets, and then like everybody's bringing everybody else Easter baskets. So my kids come home with like just like piles and piles of junk and candy, and it's like worse than Halloween.
That's like, a pain in the butt.
And all this plastic junk, you know, I mean, some of it was, you know, cute and like, you know, party favors from their little cousin's party, which was a lot of fun. And I love my godfather and my aunt, you know, they're great people. And I know they really want to do things for other people. They want to be nice, but it's just like, and everybody always wants to give things to my kids, but I'm like, where am I putting this? You know, like, okay, great. Like, we're, you know, their mother and I are separated, and, you know, so they're not here all the time. But I still only live in a 920 square foot house, and I run a pet sitting business out of that house. I don't have a lot of room. Where am I going with all these extra like Easter baskets that now apparently are like almost like Transformers, because it was an Easter basket that became a sandcastle maker somehow. I don't know. It's like and all these little dolls and these little tiny little figurines that, you know, my kids see them and they recognize them from some movie or TV show that they've seen. So they get all excited, but they're like these cheesy little plastic things. So they play semi-rough with them for 10 minutes and the head snaps off one of them. And then I have to deal with that for an hour with my child screaming hysterically because she thinks she's in trouble because she broke her doll. And I'm just like, honey, it's okay. You didn't do anything wrong, but this doesn't, that makes no sense to a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, like I said, I love my family. I grip my teeth a lot when I say that. I love my family for the most part, but I don't understand.
I love my family.
Exactly.
I swear.
I don't understand this fascination with having to, you know, it's great. You want to have a party for your child, or you want to have this event, invite people over. But like, why are we giving things to everybody now? Like, why does everybody need this junk, especially in this day and age where the economy is still, you know, not in the greatest shape in the world. And most people are, especially in my family, I know this, most of them are not doing the greatest as far as it comes to money. Like, why are we wasting our money on this junk? Hey,
I'll tell you why, because if you don't come home on Easter with 400 different Easter baskets full of crap, then the terrorists win. That's why.
Apparently, that, I mean, maybe that's a better explanation than anything else. It's just, I mean,
well, you know, despite an economy depressed, you have to keep spending in order to. Wasn't that the logic that George W. was pushing?
If oh yeah, you don't sure.
Keep spending and keep buying stuff. Well, then you know, the terrorists win.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I think he's the one who added the terrorist to it. But, you know, that's been a talking point for a long time by the Keynesians. You know, you got to spend your way out of this. It's the only way it's going to work. Yeah. Saving. Oh, you're selfish. You're one of those horrible people who wants to keep all your money and hoard it to yourself. Yeah, sorry. I want to do this crazy thing. It's called survive. And here in this world right now, in the reality we live in, thanks to you idiots bungling everything on a regular basis, whether by design or happenstance, it doesn't really matter. The results are still the same.
Yeah.
I need a lot of this green paper that you hand out to survive. So I want to save some of it. But yeah, I guess my family just doesn't get that. They just want to throw it all away. Yeah, so I mean, I joke about you know, well, because I mean, it is virtually worthless. But like I said, unfortunately, in the reality that we live in, that the stupid little green pieces of paper do have a certain amount of value, and it's largely one of the only things I can deal with on a regular basis. Because despite all my preaching, I still can't get as many people as I would like to in my area switched over to Bitcoin.
Yeah, we're trying to get a decent amount of people out here switching to Bitcoin, and it's kind of going a little bit backwards, unfortunately. One of my favorite local bookstores slash coffee shops used to accept Bitcoin, but they changed over their system and they just dropped it because I guess not enough people were using it. And wherever I go, I try to be a somewhat Bitcoin evangelist. If I go to a new restaurant and I buy something, or a new store and buy something, I ask them if they accept Bitcoin. And I know that they almost definitely don't. And I know that they'll probably think, oh, great, this guy's a bum that can't, you know, actually pay, because all of his money is in this electronic database that nobody thinks is real money. And, but, you know, I would like to hope that the more I do that, the more I say, the more people will wait, you know, kind of go research some cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin at least, if not something even farther, like Ethereum or Bitcoin or Monero or whatever. And but, you know, I do what I can there. And another thing that some of the folks that I hang out with out here are trying to do, or thinking of trying to do, is start carrying a certain amount of silver with them wherever they go and try to pay with their coffee with like a silver, you know, a quarter ounce silver piece or something like that, or maybe tenth of it. I don't really know what silver's at right now, but
somewhere in the $18 range, maybe. I don't know. I haven't actually looked in a while.
Right.
I probably should know that, because I do, allegedly, I do hold most of my precious metals in silver, so I should probably know the price of it.
Yeah.
But I've tried to do that, too. Most people just look at me really funny. Like, have you ever seen that Mark Dice video where he stands outside a
chocolate shop bar or gold coin?
Yeah. Those are like you look at that and like you laugh and you say, okay, he probably, you know, there's probably a bunch of people he cut out of the video that actually took him, you know, said, oh sure, I'll take, because, you know, not everybody's an idiot. But those crazy blank stares, yeah, I got a lot of those people. Yeah. It's just, what is that? Is that like a really big quarter or something, man? Like, no, that's not. I'm not.
We is that the new Sacagawea?
People.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Meow, meow. So we're back. Spent the first segment largely complaining about my family, and then I don't even know how we ended up getting into the. I forget how I managed to shift into Bitcoin, but we started talking about Bitcoin and silver. But one thing to finish up, at least, or maybe finish up on that conversation, I was going to say, you know, you were talking about basically being a Bitcoin evangelist, and I think I might have talked about on this show before. I know I've talked it up on my other podcast, The Seeds of Liberty, that I actually have been doing with that with my clients for the past 2+ years now. I have been trying so hard to get more people interested in it, because I took my business, well, I was trying to take my business in a more agorist route a couple of years ago, and just decided to shift away from taking credit cards and checks and stuff like that, and was really hoping to get away from cash too, but that's kind of hard, especially in this area, because, well, Bitcoin isn't, you know, it gets used a lot in the city, but not that many people out on the island, on Long Island, I think, are using it out here, because at least with my clientele, I mean, in the, you know, 200 plus people I see during the course of a year, or at least regulars that I see in the course of the year, I think maybe a handful had heard of it, and none of them wanted to pay in it, even if they had heard of it, because none of them owned any. And it took, I think, over a year and a half before I started, after I started offering it as a payment option, before somebody finally paid me in Bitcoin. And that's only because it was a friend who came in from out of town but needed my services because he was bringing his dogs and couldn't take them where he was going.
Yeah, that's it's rough. I try to, when I get certain things done, like I have a friend who does some graphic design work for me every once in a while, and I always try to it turns out that it's more most convenient to use Bitcoin in that situation because we're both avid users of Bitcoin, so that actually works out pretty well. But course, usually when I go out, I try to use it if I can, but that's a lot harder.
I almost never get to use it when I go out. But like I said, I keep trying to talk to people about it, you know. And like the other day, I met a, you know, new client. I went for a little meet and greet with them to see if they wanted me to take care of their dog, and I introduced them to it. At least, I mean, the husband knew about it, but the wife, who apparently was in the financial industry, so like I don't remember exactly what she did, but the husband was like, "How do you not know what this is? You work in such and such," and just like looked at her in complete, because she was just like, "What's that? I have no idea what that is." but you know, I at least try to get people interested in it, because I not only do I offer it as a payment option, but I say, you know, I offer a 10% discount. I say, listen, you know, you want to pay in Bitcoin, I'll give you 10% off your bill.
Yeah, I generally do that too.
So
if I'm able to sell in Bitcoin, which I don't think I've yet to ever actually sell any sort of product or service with Bitcoin. It's always been cash.
Yeah,
well, or just proper paycheck.
Yeah, I've officially only done it once, I think. Yeah, that was it, but I'm working on it, and you know, like I said, I've at least this year, at least, you know, now it's been a little over 2 years since I introduced this to my clients originally. Within the last 6 months or so, I'd say at least like 8 to 10 of my clients have come back to me and asked me more, like after, I guess, maybe hearing about it again from somebody else, came back and wanted to ask me more questions about it. So I take that as a good sign, at least. I'm like, all right, cool. You're at least somewhat interested, or you at least want to know more. That's good.
Yeah, that's awesome. You're planting those seeds.
Exactly. So, you know, well,
That was actually the only gripe I had with Anarchon. I went to Anarchon last year. It was probably one of the most fun weekends of my life. And
what is
Anarchon? The only thing is, so what?
So what is Anarchon? I don't know that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Anarchon is an anarchist festival that happens in Virginia, and it's run by Liberate RVA, based out of Richmond. And I went last year, and the only thing that was an issue is that it's the campground where it's located does not get good cell phone signal at all. So you can't accept Bitcoin when you're selling stuff. And I was providing coffee to many of the people there for a suggested donation, a strongly suggested donation, but I could only accept donations in cash.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Well, and then the thing happened. But wait, there's more.
Oh, I think we're supposed to do it on the way out, Phil. We'll have to plan, but we'll have to plan better next time. All right, so we're back. And last we left, we both stopped a little short. We both misheard the music on that one, and but at least we hit somewhere on the mark on that. But yeah, you were talking about going to Anarchon and not being able to use Bitcoin there. I had a similar problem at Porkfest, although it wasn't everybody. That was just me, because I have Sprint. Well, I use Ting, which uses the Sprint backbone. So I had no service up there. So, but there was workarounds up there. You know, people had mesh networks running, which you would think at Anarchon somebody would have had something like that set up.
I don't think it's big enough to reach that level. It's a relatively small festival in Virginia.
Well, I don't think it was. It wasn't necessarily the fact that it was the size of Porkfest, because it wasn't Porkfest offering it. It was individual people who were setting up their own for people to use.
Right.
So I don't know.
Well, what I'm saying is I don't think enough people who would have been doing that went there, because it was really small. We got really rained out. Because it happened, there was there just happened to be a hurricane that hit around the Washington D.C. area, or I think it was somewhere around there. I think it was North Carolina. Sorry, but it was affecting the area that the camp was. So a whole lot of people who were going to go ended up not being able to go, and that included some friends of mine from Florida. And so, you know, it ended up actually being a lot smaller of an event, but I really didn't mind. It was a nice intimate setting, and we got to, you know, we had some time where we were able to sort of commune around the campfire and have a couple of talks and have some music and just really enjoy exercising anarchy together.
Exercising anarchy,
yeah, just interacting anarchistically.
Yes, well, that is a lot of fun, and I get what you were saying. I mean, we've talked about this on the show plenty of times about the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, which is a smaller thing than Porkfest, and it's more my speed anyway. I had a lot more fun at that one than I did at Porkfest, so I understand.
Yeah, it's very similar, because I went to Porkfest 13, and I think that was, or not Porkfest, it was in 2013. It was Porkfest 10, and I think that was like their peak numbers. They might have had another year or two where they were still going. They were still had higher numbers, but this was the year that they had the Bob Murphy and David Friedman debate. And that drew in a whole lot of extra people, I think, including me. But it was so big, it was because there were over 1,000 people there, and it was just hard to really get any sort of community. Now I shouldn't say that, but it was just very. There were so many people that it was very difficult to kind of.
It's hard to talk. It's hard to like. Anybody you don't really know, it's kind of hard to like make, you know, meet people, really meet people and have any kind of substantial conversation with them.
Right. Exactly. I mean, there's a very palatable difference between having a very large thing like Porkfest, and you know, at that time Porkfest was kind of going towards the way of being the Burning Man of the capitalist Burning Man. The capitalist at least that's program. How I kind of saw it, but there's a very palatable difference between having this big just throw together of people and having, you know, something like 20 30 40 50 people just at campgrounds, just having community and you know, and practicing agorism and sitting around the fire and everything, and it's a totally different experience. And that's I really enjoyed Anarchon partly for that reason, and that's one of the reasons I really wanted to go to the Midwest Peace and Liberty Festival this year too, because it's from what I've seen there, it looks like very much kind of like that type of gathering.
Yeah, I mean, I went there last year for the first time, and I will be there again. I've already actually, I registered last week. It was very exciting because both my kids decided to tell me that they were willing, that they wanted to go this year. So I was like, yay, I can book it now.
Awesome.
Because last year it was a big thing. I tried to take both of them. Then one of them broke their foot a month beforehand when they went away with their mom, so she couldn't go. And then literally the day we were supposed to leave, their mom called me to tell me that the remaining Biptot, who was coming with me, woke up with a 101 fever and was not about to be going on an 11-hour car ride with me to Michigan.
Yeah.
So I had to leave them. I had to leave her behind at the last minute. So, it ended up being a lot of fun anyway, because, well, I didn't have that extra responsibility of having to play dad all weekend too. So, you know, while I missed my kids and it would have been a lot of fun to have them there, I kind of was like, wow, I guess I technically dodged a bullet. I mean, because, you know, I felt bad she was sick, but, you know, her mom took care of her. She was fine. The next day she was a lot better. And it's like, oh, well, you know, now I'm already out here and I'm not turning around and coming back. Sorry, sweetheart. Next year. There's always next year. Yeah. Yeah. So, but it should be a lot of fun this year, hopefully. I'm hoping because there's as well as the people that were out there last year that I met that I know are returning besides them, that, you know, including some of the fiends, because, of course, Lou and Diana and James Weeks will all be there. I'm not sure. I think Randy's going to be making the return, hopefully. I'm not sure. And I don't know who else. But there's also a lot of my other friends who didn't make it to either of the festivals I went to last year who are actually making the trip to this one, too. So a lot more internet friends of mine from all across the country who I've been, you know, talking to and have not only like social media interactions with, but like they're the ones I talk to on Telegram or one of those type of apps, you know, to message back and forth during the day. And I've been talking to these people for, you know, some of them years without ever seeing their face up close and personal. So I know more of them have already signed up to go. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, get that. Like you were saying that, you know, whether you want to call it the sense of community or whatever, just being able to sit around and just connect with people on that more personal level like that and just chill out and have a good time. It's good. It's needed, especially for me, because I spend so much time either just hanging out with my kids, which is great, or alone with my dogs, which can be fun, but also is quite maddening after a while. So
yeah,
having contact with other adults who aren't my clients and aren't people I meet at stores and stuff like that is nice every once in a while.
Yeah, I can imagine. So you live on Long Island, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine that can be kind of isolating as far as.
Yeah, I mean there are apparently a few anarchists out here somewhere. I've just like. I've like interacted with a couple of them on social media, but we've never actually, I guess, talked enough to be like, yeah, I kind of want to hang out with you. I'm just like, but I don't really want to say anything negative about them because it's probably just me because I'm more of a hermit for the most part anyway. It's just kind of the lifestyle I choose to lead to save myself a little money and my sanity.
I tend to be the.
If I stay in and don't go out, I don't do really stupid, crazy things. I may make an impulse buy every once in a while from sitting at my kitchen table, looking at my computer and going, oh, maybe I can swing this right now. I probably shouldn't, but click. Oh, well, it'll be here in 2 days. You know, but other than that, I'm not out.
Thanks to modern technology, you can lose all your money without even leaving your home.
Well, yeah, you know, this is true, but luckily I have more restraint when it comes to that. If I go out, you know, a couple of friends of mine who still go out and like to hang out at bars and stuff like that, I know if I go out and with any of them, I'm, you know, even at my age, I'm still bound to end up in some type of trouble.
Yeah.
that I'm a lot more dangerous there. I've learned my limitations when it comes to, like, you know, credit and stuff like that. Like, I only have one credit card these days, and that's only for emergency purposes, mostly for my kids and my business. You know, other than that, I try really hard not to use it at all. So I don't like to purchase things. I don't like to do stuff like that anymore. I learned my lesson. You know, when I was young, I managed to turn my first set of credit cards, which was, I don't know, $300 in credit, maybe, I think, back then, into like over $3,000 worth of debt. No, maybe more of credit debt and penalties from not paying it and managing to overcharge it somehow. Like, you know, when I shouldn't have been able to do it because I had hit my limit. Somehow they let me kept charging it. And it was a whole big mess. You know, I was 18 years old. I had no idea. They, you know, I get a credit card application in the mail and they said, "You've been approved." I said, "Excellent. Where do I sign up?"
They like me. They really like me.
Exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I had to go through.
I am thankfully pretty good about not racking up credit card debt. My issue is eating out and going out for, you know, coffee and drinks here and there when I really shouldn't be. And sometimes that'll rack up my bills more than it should. But
yeah, see, I usually, again, I try to avoid all that stuff. For the most part, I try to make my own coffee, although I did switch to a weird tea concoction earlier this year because I was sick and I just kept drinking that. So I drink a lot less coffee, but I make my own bulletproof coffee.
Well, I actually roast my own coffee. Oh. So I generally make my own coffee too, but I like to go to coffee shops because and small pubs because I find it a lot easier to work in a place like that than at home. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's more when we get back from this trip for the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolfe. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Apparently, Ann Coulter doesn't like my city.
Oh no!
Yeah. So there's an article on Kiro 7. Kiro 7 is a local station. Ann Coulter doesn't care if North Korea nukes Seattle. And well, I care.
Well, that's like when I can imagine. I mean, I hear that all the time. You know, plenty of people say they don't care if New York gets wiped off the map. I'm like, hey, if the city gets nuked, I'm dead, man. That's not cool.
Right.
But why in particular does she not? I mean, I assume it has something to do with the highly socialist concentration of people.
Yeah,
there,
I would assume. But she doesn't necessarily state in 140 characters or less. Her tweet says, "General Michael Hayden says, North Korea will make nuke capable of hitting Seattle! ! Situation will be dire as soon as they can hit a city worth saving." That hurts, Anne. It hurts.
Oh,
right here.
Yes.
Yeah, I kind of see where she's coming from. Thing is, the city voted like 70% for Hillary Clinton, and that's not
only 70. That seems a little low.
Well, that's not counting Green Party votes and things like that that
yes.
went far left or farther left. But even more more pressing is that we actually have a legitimately socialist party member in the city council here. And we have one of our mayor essentially has never seen a tax that he doesn't like. He is just trying to suck up money from everybody in, you know, from homeowners, from, I mean, they just raised the sales tax and they raised the tax on cars and or the registration and stuff to pay for this idiot light rail thing that, of course...
What is that? What are those high-speed trains?
I don't think it's even a high-speed train. It's just a city commuter train.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's just the regular old train.
Yeah, it's the Sound Transit. And they just want to add one more stop in Seattle. And they like tripled fees to register a car in the state. So... And all of this is basically just for Seattle. You know, the people in Tacoma, the people out in Walla Walla, they don't get any benefit from this. But you know, at least the people in Tacoma still have to pay the higher car registration fees. I think they still do in the... I've heard that it's sort of a cascading effect so that it lowers a little bit the further you get out. But, yeah.
Well... Yeah, I mean, that's horrible, but unfortunately, like I said, you know, I know what that's like. You know, I live in the shadow of New York City, which is kind of the same thing. They do a lot of insane things there in the city that trickles down and, you know, lands on all of us out here on, you know, and the same thing, the further you get up north upstate, it's not, you know, because when people around the country condemn New York, you know, I used to have to argue this with my buddy Dave that I do the Seeds of Liberty podcast with, because he's from Bama. He's, I don't think he's ever been north of the Mason-Dixon line. And he just assumes New York, like you tell him you live in New York, he just assumes as everything's the city. Like, that's what New York is to a lot of, you know, most people hear New York, they think that's what New York is. Just everything's New York City. It's like, no, it's really not. You go, like, you know, not even 45 minutes north of the city, and you're in, like, the countryside. There's farms, there's apple orchards, there's, you know, there's a place that does raw milk products and grass-fed beef that's just, you know, only a... half an hour, 45 minutes outside the city that I get all my stuff from, that they, you know, they deliver down here to me. So it's a beautiful country up there, and they're not as crazy as the people in New York City. But
yeah.
But I know
I live in Rochester.
Like.
I haven't heard of that borough. Is that next to Manhattan?
Yeah, exactly. So, but I know what that's like, the effects of living in the shadow of a place like that, where they don't care. They could just, yes, let's just tax. It's not really going to affect us much. Everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a certain sort of intellectual isolation that characterizes these places. It's...
Yeah, it really is. I didn't notice as much until... talked to one of my friends who still lives in the city, and I'm like, oh yeah, you really have been corrupted. It's horrible. Just get out of that place. Poisoning your mind, man.
But I would prefer not to die of nuke, so there's that.
Sure. Alright. We'll be back in the next hour.
Are you tired of stinky socialists trying to take over America?
And are you also tired of theorists talking about the free market as a cure-all for every problem with no firsthand experience of how the market actually works?
Well, the Truth, Justice, American Way app gives you wall-to-wall shows by hosts who not only understand the market, but tell you how they make money in a variety of patriotic endeavors.
The Truth, Justice, American Way app for Android is 24/7 streaming audio content on the topics of finance, liberty, self-defense, and technology.
All the hosts are all American Americans from all over America.
And the app is made in Wyoming, the cowboy state.
Because you should buy American, even with free Android apps.
Truth, Justice, American Way. Useful information, compelling personalities, and superior American audio quality.
Go on the Google Play Store or the Amazon App Store and search Truth, Justice, American Way.
God bless each and every one of you, and God bless America.
Meow. broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LivePair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo India Papa Coin Cot.org. Went into the Bitcoin spiel there for a minute.
getting your BIP wording confused.
Yeah.
It happens, man. Bitcoin.
BIPCOT.
BIPCAT.
Yeah, Bitcoin.
It can get a little confusing sometimes. You gotta mind your BIPs, man. All right, so we're back for the second hour. All right, I'm Jeremy. That's Phil.
And I am Phil.
Yeah. And we talked about a whole bunch of stuff in the first hour, including me complaining about my parents and Ann Coulter not caring if Phil gets nuked. Thanks a lot, Ann. It's really,
seriously. Nice. I'd make fun of her long neck, but I have a long neck too, so I can't.
All right, so well, I'm sure we could find something else, but yeah. Anyhoodle. So, well, we had a couple of stories that we were going to try to get to, but we ended up having so much fun talking about all sorts of other things. The first hour, we never got to them, but first one we're going to start off with here. I saw this posted a couple times earlier, and it I'm not going to bury the lead. I'm going to get to it. But at first, I really thought that what I saw, because there's a video attached to this article, but I thought this was a parody. Like, I didn't think this was serious, and then I tracked it down, and I was very, very saddened to find, oh, no, this was completely serious. This is a video and an article attached from, I found this from the Daily Commercial. .com, but it was linked in a couple other places too. But the video and the title is Sheriff Grinnell's Stern Warning to Heroin Dealers Goes Viral. And there's a video put on by the Lake County Sheriff's Office, which is somewhere in Florida, I believe. Right, Phil? I think we figured that out.
Yes. And so we had Florida man, now we have Florida cop.
Yes, Florida cops. And yeah, it is
just north
of
Orlando.
Okay, there you go. So this is a 1 minute, like it's a 1 minute long video, and it's this, promotional thing that he was putting out, and it's him, this Sheriff Grinnell, who I looked into this, and this is how I found out that this wasn't a parody. He actually became sheriff last year, so he's only been there for a little under a year, I believe, at this point. And he's there behind the podium talking really tough about, heroin dealers. And he's flanked by two officers on each side of him in like full, like look what looks like, bulletproof vest and everything and ski masks on.
Yeah. Balaclavas.
thank you. That's the word I was looking for. They look like ISIS terrorists.
Yeah.
Or at least all the videos we see of ISIS terrorists, like that's what they look like. They look and they're standing there with their hands in front of them, and they stand there the entire time, almost non-moving, non-moving as this sheriff goes on this rant about how he's giving a warning to drug dealers, how, they need to look over their shoulders constantly. And so be prepared for their doors to be kicked off the hinges, with the emotional peels constantly referring to the poison that they're putting into people's veins.
That's what they're doing. They're putting it directly into people's veins.
Oh yeah. Well, apparently that's what Sheriff Grinnell thinks, because he went so far as to say if we can. He basically said, and this is not as far. I don't think this is a hyperbole at all or anything like that. He basically said that if they can find anything to link you to someone who has overdosed, they will make sure that you get charged and convicted. I think he was very convinced about that. Of murder. So, just for you giving something to another consenting adult, and you a consenting adult making a deal, and that's before we even get to the fact that the whole reason that there's any tainted heroin, which is usually what ends up killing most of these people, is because of idiots like Sheriff Grinnell and his drug warriors in the first place. Because if they weren't there, threatening to cage and kill people over this stuff, well, then the black market wouldn't be necessary and there'd be a lot less violence involved and there'd be a lot less junky products being out there because, well, the market wouldn't allow for it.
Yeah. Well, meth only became a thing because, it as big of a thing as it is because of prohibition.
Yes.
Because prohibition of cocaine and speed. And
yeah, of course. Any all those, you know, all the designer drugs, you know, those were other things that became big because of the illegality of everything else. You know, you make it harder to procure things that, you know, I mean, cannabis is obviously the easiest example because it's the one thing that really does no harm.
Yeah, and they still want it. And the synthetic substitute problem came about because of prohibition of marijuana. Head shops started selling these subpar synthetic substitutes like K9 and spice or whatever they are, allegedly. And people started seriously getting messed up on this stuff and having like mental breakdowns and things like that. And sorry, people, but weed doesn't do that. Weed is not nearly as dangerous as the substitutes that came out and were being sold because of its illegality.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that stuff, too. And I actually smoked some of it once or twice. I'm lucky to, like, you know, in retrospect, I'm lucky nothing ever happened to me. Because I've heard some of those stories of what happened to people after smoke. Although I think a lot of them were smoking a lot more of it than just once or twice. But still, yeah. And I'm somebody who's been a regular cannabis smoker for over almost two decades now, and I can safely say that, yeah, I've never seen cannabis do that stuff. That what happened to those people? I've never seen that do it to anybody. So,
right,
I think you made the problem worse.
Yeah, the worst thing pot does to you is make you fat and lazy, and even then, it takes a certain kind of person.
This is true. But even with the other ones, like you know, Sheriff Grinnell's all upset about heroin. Even with heroin. If heroin wasn't illegal, you know, if people still wanted to use it, because, you know, a lot of times people move to heroin because it's actually relatively cheap and you can get a killer high off it. So I've been told. I've never actually done heroin, but plenty of people have told me that the high is quite nice. But you can get it relatively cheap, and in most places, especially like, you know, in the cities like we were talking about earlier, you can come across it quite easily. Sometimes even more easily than cannabis. So, you know, it's out there everywhere, but because it has, you know, if that wasn't the case, if it wasn't illegal, if people still wanted to get it, you could have, you know, more business built up around it by having companies that would test the quality of your
composition
stuff. Yeah, you know, make sure it's good stuff, you know, make sure it's not laced with anything, you know, unnecessarily. Right. Because again, when you have the business that's underground now because they're illegal, you can't really get consequences through the legal system if somebody sells you a bad batch, unless they catch you, like unless somebody like Sheriff Grinnell catches you, and then he's going to want to do all sorts of nasty things to you, I imagine. But normally, it's like, you know, especially like if you get ripped off for, you know, if you go to a buy and they hold you up and say, just give me your money, and then you leave with no money and no drugs. What are you going to do? Call the cops? Oh, my drug dealer ripped me off. You know, they don't care unless you're going to become a informant for them, which is a whole nother mess. You don't really want to get yourself involved in for many, many reasons. You know, they're not going to do anything about it. But if it was legal or decriminalized, more like it, then you could have businesses set up where people would be purchasing it. You know, in plain sight, for lack of a better term. And then if you did get ripped off, well, then nobody would want to go buy from you anymore. And then, you know, there could be consequences a lot more easily. So it automatically gives people an incentive to provide a better product and not rip their clients off because, well, you're not going to make a lot of money if you try ripping your clients off and word gets around quickly, because then nobody's going to want to purchase from you anymore. Or yeah.
Well, that was one of the biggest services of the Silk Road. So the Silk Road was a popular drug marketplace that was on the dark net that, you know, you had to go through an Onion browser to get to, generally Tor. But one of the best services about that was that it had a rating system sort of similar to eBay. And you could, you know, it was a private accountability service, so that people that were selling drugs on there actually got rated and rated. But they were, you know, people, the customers would be rating their service and their product, and people, bad actors, were essentially couldn't maintain their business. And it increased the quality of the output. It decreased the danger. And it's also decreased drug violence in general. And this was shown when little Chucky Schumer decided to go full force against the whole thing. And threw Ross Ulbricht in jail, the founder of the Silk Road. And after that, drug violence started going up again, and overdoses started going up again, and it had a clear impact, a clear positive impact, and it showed just how bad the drug war doesn't work.
Yeah, but that's not going to stop them, because people like Chucky, and for anybody who doesn't know, I mean, that's one name I think most people who don't even if you don't follow politics, even if you know like the bare minimum about politics, his name comes up. The horrible, horrible, disgusting human being who's been a senator from New York for I can't even remember how long at this point.
But his name usually comes up in any conversation about politics, and it's usually followed by a little bit of vomit in the back of your throat.
Yes, yeah. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Chuck. Up Chuck.
Sociopath.
Up Chuck Schumer. There you go.
Up Chuck.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Hi there. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Purse.io is a great website where you can spend Bitcoin on Amazon or trade Amazon gift cards for Bitcoin. I use Purse myself and I love it. You can also get discounts on Amazon. You can get 5% right this minute, or if you place your order and wait a day or so, you can name your discount and get 10%, 20%, even up to 33% off. You can try Purse right now and get 0.01 Bitcoin free after you complete your first order over $50. And if you go through the Freedom Fiends link, Purse will also send 0.01 Bitcoin to the Freedom Fiends. Help yourself to some agorism and help Liberty Media while you're at it. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Purse link at the top right, even if you've used Purse before. Or enter the referral code FIENDS when you sign up at purse.io. That's FIENDS. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra. Do it.
We were just talking about this sort of Hank Schrader wannabe looking guy in Lake County, Florida. So Hank Schrader was the DEA agent in Breaking Bad. He was a
I still haven't seen that show.
Oh yeah. Yeah, well he was a kind of a feminine hygiene product. he was a really obnoxious character, but. But I was looking at this video with, you know, with the terrorists on each side of this guy, and I just, is it just me, or does this really kind of stink of just the last flailing arms, you know, grasp of a failing drug war? It's like they know that they're losing, and this is their, you know, this is one of their Hail Marys to try to keep things going.
Yeah, it definitely, it does seem like that, because I would assume anybody at this point who's still in law enforcement, who still holds the position that they're doing the right thing by enforcing all these idiotic laws about drugs and punishing people for a lot of this stuff is, you know, has to be like in such denial or just that much of a sociopath that the only thing they could do is like, I think they're beyond quadrupling down at this point. I mean, I don't even know what level they're at, but yeah, it does seem like they would have to be at this point, because what else are they going to do? Yeah. Unless they're just feeling,
at that point,
I was just going to say, unless they're feeling invigorated by, you know, with Jeff Sessions being the attorney general and him making the bold statements he's making just about cannabis, you know,
yeah.
Like, people like these guys are probably all like, yeah, he's on our side, so we can, you know, we can talk a lot tougher now. I don't know. Maybe that's it, too.
Yeah, but even, you know, anything Jeff Sessions does is going to be the same thing. It's still going to be one last grasp at a failing drug war, and it's going to come to an end. It has to. It's just not sustainable. But the... If I lost my train of thought, I was going to say something about it.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, I guess from our perspective, sure, it's a last grasp, but there's still people out there. I mean, I still come across people that really think that even if they think they've softened their stance on cannabis maybe a little bit, they still think all these other drugs are the devil and people, you know, they can't make the connections that we were talking about earlier, you know, with how with the economic incentives and the protections that would now be available because it's not something that has to be hidden type of thing, you know, like that it would actually make it safer. Like they can't translate that to any, like, see it to the other quote unquote hard drugs, because, you know, there's that cognitive dissonance that they've just been informed that it's just really, really bad, or, you know, they'll have a horror story of one family member they know that, what, you know, did some really crazy stuff, and it's like, okay, yeah, but how about all the functional people that you've come across in your daily life, your entire life, that you have no idea that have done this stuff, you know, and are not like that, you know? It's about giving them the opportunity to do it, not letting everybody do whatever they want to do, but it's not punishing people who are responsible with these things and do use whatever substance they choose to use for whatever reason and don't injure anybody else in the process. You know, it's about not punishing them, not about letting the other people do whatever they want and hurt people in the process.
The drug war is one of the highest collateral damage wars that we've been in here, if not the highest. You know, it's the collateral damage of the drug war is ridiculous. There's been no real clear positive effect from it. And back to what you were saying about the denial, you know, people, cops that are still on this side of this issue, on this pro drug war bent, they either don't care, in which they're a sociopath and a liar, or they are so badly dealing with their cognitive dissonance that it's just insane. Because the whole drug war is complete insanity.
Yeah,
there's no good reason for it. And you would have thought that prohibition of alcohol would have at least shown them something, but...
Well, no, because...
It's the government. Of course they're not going to learn their lesson.
Thanks, government. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends! Freedom Fiends! Helping the helpless! State, fighting the forces of hate. Freedom, helping the helpless.
go plow.
We were busy pointing out the complete insanity of the drug war and ripping apart the sheriff's office from, what is it, Lake County, somewhere in Florida.
Yeah, it's a little bit northwest of Orlando. I said it was just north, but it's a good jog northwest.
Okay, well, wherever you are, you horrible, horrible people. Them and their now viral video of their terror, like straight up terror. Like, I'll put this in the show notes, but yeah, check this out if you haven't seen it already. Like, the just, they literally look like terrorists just standing up there and flanking this guy as he's acting all tough about the drug war and how he's going to kick people's doors in and, you know, kick them off the hinges and stuff.
Yeah, so. And you know, a lot of libertarians make this comparison between cops and terrorists, and you know, of course, it usually comes off as very hyperbolic. Well, you can't really say that anymore if you watch that video, because it's no longer hyperbolic. They are actually dressed like terrorists. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's insane. So, but we could, you know, we've talked about that that topic to death on this show before. So, and we could probably keep talking about it. But I didn't want to switch gears before I start ranting again about this horrible man, and how I really feel about him, and you know. Probably start
some
to worry about
capitalism now.
FCC violations. Yeah, we'll switch gears a little bit to another story I found, which will of course probably agitate some people who, you know, think of the horrible 1% and stuff like that. And if you're talking about the, you know, the 1%, well, according to this article that I came across, which is actually on the Mises Institute website, Jeff Bezos is set to become the world's richest man. He's looking to top Bill Gates, I believe. Because I didn't think Gates was number one anymore. I thought somebody else was, but I guess Gates is still up at the top. But
I think it kind of fluctuates.
I know it goes up a lot, up and down a lot. But I knew there was like, aren't there like Saudi princes that are in that list too, and people of that stature?
Yeah, but oil kind of took a dive a little while ago, so maybe that knocked him out.
There you go.
Just something I pulled out of my butt.
it's possible, but the title of this, and it's not a very long article, but the title of this is Jeff Bezos got rich by giving his customers what they want, and this is very true because, you know, whether, you know, what you, I mean, I'm not a particularly big fan of Bezos himself. I mean, some of the comments I've seen him make about, you know, just life in general, and he seems like he's somebody who is quite all right with government in general. One of the things that upsets me about him is that
he was one of the people that was pushing the state sales tax requirement for every online vendor to charge the state sales tax for whatever state they're selling to.
Oh yes,
he was one of the pushers, or at least Amazon was one of those pushers behind that, which is of course rent seeking.
Yes. I'm not a fan of him for that either. But he also, you know, now he owns the what is it, the Washington Post, right? That horrible rag.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, he bought the Washington Post last year or the year before, which, you know, most mainstream newspapers are horrible, but I remember from back in the days when I still read newspapers and stuff like that, the Washington Post is kind of like the New York Times. It's like Washington's version of that, where it's like, you know, horribly, horribly slanted left wing, and you know, just anything the Republicans do is horrible, and anything the Democrats do is wonderful for the most part. But he bought that, so I don't trust too many people that want to own a big newspaper like that and be able to control the narrative for things.
Right.
But he did, you know, what he did from with Amazon, and he's another one who literally pretty much started off in his basement, didn't he? Or something like that, or his garage or something like that. He was another one kind of like Steve Jobs, right? Who just started off with nothing and worked his way up. Because in this article, it talks about like they were, you know, for the first 6 years, they were losing money.
Amazon as a company was losing money, but I'm pretty sure he had a, I'm pretty sure he came out of like business school or something like that. I think it was an engineering degree. Sorry, but he was. I think he started Amazon sort of legit, and maybe it was out of his home office or something. But
no, it was it was legit. But I'm saying it was like it was very small. And then once he started having employees and stuff, that he still wasn't making money, and he still continued to pay everybody, and you know, kept feeding money out. Yeah. Because they started way back in, you know, Amazon.com launched way back pretty much with the beginning of the web back in 95. And, you know, original, and I remember it back then because, you know, I had my AOL account way back then. Little dial-up, you know, with the stupid discs they would, the CD ROMs, discs they would send you in the mail. And I remember Amazon, and back then it was pretty much just a bookstore, an online bookstore.
Yeah, well, that was his original goal, was just to have a all together bookstore with that was able to sell off for really cheap, and it just kind of blew up into this powerhouse warehouse website, and it's a really great story, you know. But with it was a really great service that he put together, and it's no mistake that. There's a reason why everybody goes to Amazon. That's the first place they go when they want to buy something, because it usually has a good service, fast turnaround, low prices, and decent security on quality. So,
yep, yeah, it does. But yeah, and like, you know, like the title of the article says, you know, he gave people what they wanted. Yeah. And whether they realize they wanted it, you know, which is what you have to do when you create a product, you know, when you're trying to break into a market, what do? You have to figure out what people want. Even if they don't necessarily know they want it, you create something that they all of a sudden have to have, type of thing. And the convenience of Amazon, I mean, I'm somebody who's, you know, I've used Amazon for years now. And you know, like you were saying, I mean, I find things that even sometimes if I find something that is, even if it's a little more expensive on Amazon, 9 times out of 10, I'll end up purchasing it just because of the convenience of me not having to take the extra time to go out of my way to go to the store and deal with, you know, traffic and, well, the public and all that other stuff, and just, you know, time that I could be spend doing something else where I could just take 2 minutes to order it online and have it at my door. You know, I could have it there the next day if I wanted to, but you know, for quote unquote free in 2 days because of Prime, because you know, I pay my Prime membership every year and it more than pays for itself with all the junk that I order from there, between, you know, whatever I do order for myself and whatever all the ridiculous amount of things I have to order for my kids. I'm constantly ordering on that. So between that and the amount of movies that I watch and TV shows from Amazon Prime, it more than pays for itself.
And they keep innovating too. It's like they never cease to innovate. They're, you know, optimizing warehouse operations with drone shelving units that move all of the merchandise into the perfectly organized, optimally situated thing so that it gets shipped quickly and efficiently and everything. And Jeff Bezos was also I think he was the first one pushing drone delivery. But of course, the FCC immediately came down on him about that. But now you see UPS starting to implement drone delivery into their fleet.
I think we actually doing. I know that was, I'm pretty sure that was talked about on this show. I don't remember if it was me or us, or was that, what is it? What did we talk about it?
I don't remember if it was us, but I remember.
I know it has been talked about. Yeah, I remember hearing it on the show. At least somebody was talking about it. But yeah, where they were doing the testing for it and stuff, where they have the drones launching from the trucks, which is awesome.
Yeah, but that idea was originally, as I understand it, came from Jeff Bezos and Amazon. Maybe not Bezos himself, but
Amazon. Was it last year or the year before? They had a pilot program ready to go, and then the FCC shut them down. They're like, no, you can't do that here.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think that was actually 2 years ago, if I recall correctly.
Because I remember people, it was allowed to happen for a little while because I know I came across people who had actually gotten the service. And it was like same day service within like an hour, people were getting their deliveries like dropped at their doorstep. It was insane. And it was like, the future is here. And except, well, then government, well. You know, as usual, then government.
And also,
the same reason we don't have flying cars yet. People want to deliver stuff by a drone to your doorstep, and the government said, no, that's too efficient. We need to put a stop to that right now.
Yeah. But also, another thing they implemented is the Amazon lockers, which have been helpful for people who live in an area where maybe they can't have a package sitting on their doorstep for too long, and they don't have the time because they're working 9 to 5 to go to the UPS office or go to the post office, because, you know, we all know the post office is purely there to help, and they'll go out of their way to go extra hours to of course not. They're not.
Well, actually, the funny thing you say that they actually kind of do though, because at least around here, it's the USPS who delivers my Amazon packages on Sundays.
What? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, on Sundays, all of a sudden the USPS works now and they deliver Amazon packages.
Oh, that's new.
I don't know what the deal is that they have worked out and how that came to be, but
I wonder if it was some it's probably just some last ditch attempt to salvaging the post office as being supposedly self-sustained
or needed for that matter.
Right. We're the only ones who can deliver on Sunday. I wonder why that is.
Well, they're taking away one of my best lines for my business, because I usually tell people when I met clients for the first time, it's like, I'm like the just think of me like the postman, but better, because I work 7 days a week.
Nice.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
Welcome back. This is the Freedom Fiends. And for a redemption, lest you think we forgot about World War III, I suppose we. The way I look at it is you know, libpair radio, what radio would sound like in the free world. Well, we wouldn't be talking about World War III, would we?
This is true. This is true.
But I guess we have to approach this at least a little bit today.
Probably mention it. Yeah, there's some problems happening. There's some bombs being dropped. There's some people there's a whole lot of Richard waving going on. It's good times we live in.
Well, Donald Trump got confused. He was invited to a ritualistic rain dance, and instead he ended up throwing a bunch of tomahawks at Syria. So, it happens. But, yeah, so the three headlines that I'm looking at are thus ring the bells of war. The Independent: Russia and Iran warn U.S. will respond with force if red lines crossed in Syria again. The Politico: Russia and U.S. to maintain hotline to prevent mid-air collisions. Well, at least there's still a line open. at least we could still call each other on the phone. And RT: Trump considering sanctions against Russia and Iran over Syria.
Oh, because that always goes really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, granted, that is RT, so they may be blustering some propaganda for whatever Russia's interests are in this.
Oh, that's absolutely true.
Yeah. But that might just be extra demonizing, but
it could be. But you wouldn't put it past them, because, well, that's one of the United States government's most favorite tactics, is to place sanctions on another country to punish the evil government who is not getting along with them, which of course never works, because all that ends up happening is the people of the country get punished and the people in government continue to live their lives as, yeah, you know, richly. And, you know, they may have to cut back a little bit, but they were already most likely stealing from their own people to begin with. So, you know, they just have to, you know, when they have to tighten their belts, it's, you know, basically giving up like their 25th pair of tennis shoes, you know, versus
more like their 25th yacht, I think, especially at Putin's point. Putin is so rich that. And we've been, I'm pretty sure we've had sanctions on Russia for years of one sort or the other. And, you know, Putin is still one of the richest men in America or in the world. So,
yeah. Yeah. So, like I said, whether that's true or not, it's well within the realm of reason, because, well, it happens all the time.
Well, at least he behaves opulently enough to look very rich.
Yeah, so.
But that's the thing. I don't think Russia, and I think they know this, Russia does not, a war does not work out well for Russia. It's, you know, they can't win a war. They may be able to make everybody lose a war, but I don't think Russia would have a chance.
They don't have the military strength anymore, no.
Yeah. So I think Putin knows that it's not in his best interest to actually go to war. What is in his best interest is the sort of animalistic puffery that, you know, that Trump has, that essentially got Trump into the position he's in. And that's a lot of what Putin runs on, is just the strongman government, being the strongman. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't look like the strongman, that's what doesn't come out well for him. And I think it's the same thing with Trump. Like you said, it's a big Richard swinging contest.
Yeah. Yep. Yep, it is. Well, and of course, the, you know, there's that pesky fact that there sure does seem to appear to be plans for, two different pipelines running right through Syria for oil, one of which the U.S. wants to control, one of which Russia wants to control. So, of course, you know, there's a reason they kind of both like that area. But yeah, it really is just it's just so much posturing right now. And
you know what? For all we know, maybe there was no chemical weapons, and all that happened was Assad just made fun of Donald's hands.
worms, Phil. Worms.
Well, worms indeed.
Hopefully, you know, the war isn't all-consuming and we're still around next week.
Yeah. Hopefully we survive.